Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Griplock preview for the Portland Open, a disc golf pro tour plus event.
Plus.
Big day or big event, 4 days, two courses, Glendevere East and Glendevere West. Looked at the caddy books, no major changes from what I saw. It seems that they basically, there was a few like pin location movements. There was one that got elevated. Really the only big one that was affected was they moved an MPO one that was a par four, like 100 or so feet shorter, turned into a par three. But the same property, same shot shapes on pretty much.
Wait, was that the drivable par four?
I don't think so. It was like a 600 some foot.
Say the drivable par four is sick.
I already can't tell you which course it was on, east or west, because I'm not going to lie to you. They bleed over in my head.
I'll say when you talk about these courses, I think there's a few things to say. One, I like this course for a few reasons or courses. I like that this is one of the nicest golf properties they play on all year in like prime season. So it looks really nice. I think there's also some really creative hole designs. Some of it gets a little repetitive. But I don't like the fact that they're playing two different courses. I guess probably a lot of that has to do with pace of play. Maybe like being able to have FPO on one, MPO on another.
Well, I think the plus events, that's what they want.
Right.
Because Waco, we saw the two.
Yeah.
Ledgestone, we see two courses. I think it's when they go to four rounds, they want two courses.
And it's not detrimental to the event, but when you have two courses on the same property, especially being a golf property, we have no chance at remembering it.
My problem, or it's not even a problem, but the two courses I don't have an issue with when it's like Waco, Waco and you had the Beast, very drastically different. Ledgestone, two drastically different courses.
Yeah.
GMC, pretty different. You know, Brewster and Fox Run, but you can't,
they have their own personality.
There are a few holes you kind of forget which horse is on. This one, like Glendevere East and West, they have the same feel. From what I remember, I think Glendevere East has a little bit more water in play. But beyond that, like you're in Portland, you're on a golf course, sick looking course, really big pine trees or whatever trees they are. And they use those trees pretty well. I think that both courses, though, like they'll be playing in an alleyway of trees, and it's almost like you hit the Mando, and then it doesn't matter a lot of times if you hyzer outside of the trees.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of just bring it back in. So I do think this is a course that favors guys who throw far.
Yes.
I think it does favor balanced players who have a backhand forehand roller, but it doesn't require it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can throw far and you have a really controlled backhand, there's been plenty of players that we've seen success out of with just that. But I do think if you have the balanced game, there is an advantage to it there. But distance is almost a must here. Distance with accuracy. There's OB that comes into play. There is a lot of gaps to hit, but I wouldn't call it technical by any means. It is a golf course, and bombers should have fun.
It's funny you mentioned distance, though, because if you look at our stat sheet here, who's the number one player over the last two events? Isaac Robinson.
But Isaac has very sneaky distance. He doesn't have that top class, but when you go like controlled distance, he's up there.
Yeah, well, control. Certainly, he's very accurate, but
pointing to somewhere, like I think you could point to 420, 450 down the fairway, and he'd be with the best of them of getting a
450?
Disc in place there. Yeah,
I don't know about 450.
I think he'd be with the best of them in that area, but he's not going to be able to push a shot 500, 550. But where I think Isaac Robinson, because we'll talk about him a little bit more, but where I think a player like him makes up is he has the accuracy, whether he's 250 out at his best. With 250 to 300 out, he has the accuracy that a lot of the far throwers have still at that 200 foot out. So, well, like if you're 75 feet back, but you're just as accurate, it doesn't really matter.
The bottom line is with these golf courses, you can make the bomber argument because yes, they will get further down the fairway, and this kind of goes into that point. But at the end of the day, at usually these properties and especially this one, they have some of the most particular and protected greens that we play because they use a lot of mounds, a lot of bunkers, and greens as hazards.
It's a lot about approach play.
There is a ton of angle control and approach play involved on these courses. A lot of skip control on certain shots as well. So I think that's a big part of things. Is you mentioned a guy like Isaac, because I agree. I think he's as good in that 300 to 350 range as anybody. So even if the longer guys are throwing their approaches from 200 out and he's 300 out, he's still going to be very effective. And I think that plays into this.
Well, when we look at the past player performance list that's in front of us here, I didn't get this graphic to side, guys, so it's not on the screen. My bad. But I'll just read it to you. We have Isaac, Gannon, Simon, Corey Ellis, Paul McBeth. They're your top five.
Yeah.
When you look at them, they have a wide variety of a lot of their game, but I think what I would group all of them in on is angle control. I think all of them have really good angle control, which plays into the skips, attacking greens, that type of stuff, and the way a disc is going to land and in the fairway. And they just have angle control with specifically backhand, I think, is what kind of ties all of them together.
Mm-hmm.
Funny thing is, only one of the players in the top five there has actually won out here, which is Simon Lazat winning 2 years ago. He's not going to be playing this event. The rest of them, like, they just average really well, but they're finishing in third, fourth, or so.
Yeah.
This course, speaking of averages, is Glendevere East ties Swenson Park, which we saw last week, as the average feet per stroke, the hardest average feet per stroke at 171 feet. Glendevere West comes in fifth at 167 feet per par stroke. And the overall average score per round, Portland comes in 11th at an average of negative 1.4. So basically, not the hardest, like the not middle. The easiest course.
Yeah. Well, if you remember this course, and both these courses, and this kind of swing was when the courses are getting too long narrative was really starting to pop up. You were hearing a lot of players start to complain, like, like they're throwing as hard as they can on every shot. And there's a lot of long holes. I mean, there are, I think, multiple 1,000-foot par fives, a lot of over 400-foot par threes. It is a course where you're going to have to throw a lot of full power shots, because I remember multiple players speaking out being like, this is getting out of control. But I've always enjoyed watching these courses. I think the properties, like I said, look really great. And it's not, whenever you have two golf courses, I'm not going to be able to just spit out every single hole, but I'm going to enjoy it as I'm consuming it, because I feel like there is a really big selection of entertaining golf holes, and some really unique ones as well. So, I still do really like this property and this event in general.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I want to talk about that Edwin Stat brought up here is there's four players that have finished in the top 10 out here every single start. We have Ricky Wysocki with three starts, all top 10. You have Paul McBeth, two starts, Gannon Burr, two starts, Isaac Robinson, two starts. Ricky also is on the best rounds list, shooting one off the course record. This was all in 2019, though. Mm-hmm. You had Kevin Jones pop off a 15 under, Ricky with a 14 under, and Eagle with a 13 under, all in 2019. Safe to say the course has changed pretty drastically since then. But interesting stuff to note. Now, last year, there was a playoff between Adam Hammons and Aaron Gossage to kind of decide this event. Not kind of decide, it did decide the event. That's how playoffs work. and it was the second event in a row last year that had somewhat unusual winners, with Emerson Key taking down OTB and then Adam Hammons out here in Portland. Emerson was not able to defend his title. What do you think about Adam Hammons' chance defending his title out here?
Well, you know, his win last year, he's just been having kind of a quiet season. And Hammons is a really curious one, because when a lot of the, you know, he's had success winning on tour more so. I believe he won an MVP Open.
I think so.
And then he may have actually done that in the same season as, no, because he just won Portland last year. But I think he had two wins the year he won MVP. So he's had this weird kind of career where, like a lot of the young guns, he struggled to find his footing completely as like a young gun on tour, or like a consistent figure on tour. But he has the wins, you know, like him and AB are compared a lot. AB, it took him a long time to figure it out, but now that he has, he's gotten the wins, but he didn't have the wins before. Whereas Hammes, he's got really notable wins on tour, and very impressive ones, but that wasn't the jump start. It's been like really random blips in his career, almost kind of like a Simon Lazat type character, but it hasn't been quite as consistent and as much as like a Simon Lazat. And his game, you know, his game is very interesting, because he's just a very smooth kind of balanced game. You know, he has a great forehand, good backhand. When his putt is on, it looks lethal. One of the smoothest looking putts you'll see, especially from like that 30 to 35 foot range. So he's been one of the more curious players, because I've just waited for him to emerge. I think he sits at exactly 30th in the world rankings right now. I think that's a fair assessment of his game. Like I said, this season he hasn't been popping up as much as you would think. And yeah, it's just been an interesting one. I'd like to deep dive more into his stats and just see like what parts of his game are struggling. Is it just, oh, I can't get the putter hot, or is he just losing command, or having like a blow up round every tournament? Like, what's happening with Adam Hammons? Because he is still a good enough player, and he's still young enough that like at any given moment, you wouldn't be shocked to see him contending for a win because he's been there before. It's just, I can't quite, with certain players, you're like, ooh, look out for them. This could be their event where they pop up. Him, as I have no clue. Like, yeah. I have no idea. He may have won Waco or something. Like, I have no idea when the Jamez win is going to happen. Yeah,
I'll look it up. We've asked
his career. Go to StatMando or something.
I can just go to his
PGA. Yeah, career wins, because I don't know which ones he has, but I think he has 3 pro tours, and they're just random pop-up tournaments, like, and not all the same type of event.
Portland MVP. He won the Masters Cup when it was the NT. That could be the one you're thinking of.
It might have been that.
Because I think the rest.
Did he do Masters Cup and MVP in the same tournament or same year?
Masters Cup was 2021 and MVP was 2020.
So that was the season, yeah. And like, okay, so Masters Cup at De La, and then you have MVP, longer woods course, and then Portland, super long open course. So like,
yeah. And if you remember, I don't remember if it was that season, but one of the seasons he's got in contention and popped up at a Hall of Fame Classic, W.R.
Yeah,
Jackson.
So you have no idea when he's going to emerge, and it's super confusing. That's why I'm not immediately like, oh, Jamez, watch him to repeat, because I don't know. Like, this course doesn't necessarily just suit his game. It's just, I guess, when he gets hot.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think for some players like Simon, it seems like if Simon's putter's on, he's going to win. And there's other players where it's like, oh, they're always going to be a good putter. When X, Y, or Z's on, they're dangerous. Adam Jamez, it almost feels like his whole game's an on or off switch.
Yeah.
When I think of him, it's like, if he's on, he's just clicking. I think he's a big momentum guy where, like, if he's like riding with his game and he's front of the box and like going, then like he's unstoppable.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't get going, then he never gets going.
So this is the season so far. We start out 17th, 10th, 14th, 11th, like
fine.
Good start. Like a start where you feel like, okay, this is a good season for him as so far. Then he goes 24th, 40th, 38th, 33rd, 32nd, 18th. So it hasn't been an awful season. It's just, once again, it's like, who is Adam Jamez? He's a proven winner on this tour. So is he a guy that we should be expecting to be living in that top 20? That just hasn't quite been the case so far this year. So,
well, he's been living in the top 20 minus what, one event?
No, minus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them.
I guess top 25.
Yeah, no, he was 32nd, 33rd, 38th, 40th.
That was that one stretch. But he started off in the top 20.
Four events.
I don't know what I was thinking.
That's like half of his season so far. But I'm just saying,
I guess he was living in the top 20 to start.
He started off with a season that like was making a lot of sense to me. I was like, okay, Jamez, he's around. And I was like thinking about, okay, when do I maybe sneak him into my top 3? And then, yeah, just kind of went away. I just don't know where to place him.
All of that being said, would it surprise you if he won this week?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, if he gets hot, yeah, of course he could
win. Yeah, I think he's still really good. But when I think I just need to pay close attention if he does put a run together. Like, okay, what is he doing well this event? And that's like you mentioned.
You're not watching him.
I feel like
the other events is the problem.
Yeah,
like there's no camera on 38.
Yeah, I guess it's just maybe it's just the putt. Like maybe it could just be that
he's simple.
Close enough. Now that I look back at his finishes, he is close enough that it could be as simple as he's just not putting well. Because the difference between 35th and a top 10 is just, did you make five to eight more of your C1X putts? That's now, a lot of times the difference.
Calvin's on an absolute heater right now.
Yeah, he's dangerous.
He finished 7th last year out here, only 6 strokes off the lead. Correct me if I'm wrong. This would be his 3rd win in a row, if I'm not mistaken.
Counting Copenhagen.
Yeah, of his starts. His 3rd start win in a row. And a win here. Would that tie him with AB win-wise this season?
Yeah.
So things could be flipped on their head very quickly.
Yep.
What do you think now that he's got hot and he's stayed hot, are you expecting that for another week here?
Yeah, I expect him to be perfectly dangerous. I mean, as soon as he got that 2nd win, I kind of said, okay, he's thrown himself straight into that mix with Gannon and AB. You know, he is now having that kind of season. He had already had the finishing place, as he always does. He had one bad blip, but he's still been consistently good. And then getting that 2nd win this early in the season was like, okay, yeah, he's right there in that conversation with AB. And yeah, 3rd one, now all of a sudden he's probably having a better season.
Well, yeah, because if you look back, right, he came out the gates, he had this elbow injury. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, he might now be throwing full power forehands, but I think even when he won OTB, he still wasn't throwing full power.
Yeah, he hasn't even been at full strength.
So, like, he's not even at full strength.
The diamond effect, man. These injuries, they help people out sometimes.
To me, Calvin Heimberg's as dangerous as ever. I think that he's the guy out of the Gannon, AB, Calvin. Right now, momentum-wise, he's the must have in your top three.
Yeah.
The other two, I think there's rationale because they've been quote unquote slipping. They're not. I mean, I think Gannon's finished outside the top 10 once. Yeah. AB just had his worst finish at like 18th. So
yeah,
they slipping is a whole different ball game than the rest of the field. But for them and the start they started, they are slipping. Yeah. So I think Calvin's the one that's like your guy in the top three right now. I mean, so you have to like him week in and week out. There's not really a course that doesn't suit Calvin Heinberg's game.
You'll never
know. More so, more so a question of, is there someone else that this course suits better and they get really hot? It's yeah. kind of just what, because Calvin, I think, will be in contention.
Yeah.
It's just like, is it someone else's weekend?
I think when you see certain courses on tour that are like specialist type courses, when you go into the woods a lot, you bring in more luck. I think that hurts his chances. When you get out into really long courses in the open, I think you just bring in a larger group of players that have a chance to win. So I think that hurts his chances. But I think I like him better at this end of the spectrum than you would at like the Champions Cup situation where you're just bringing in probability, because he's still going to be able to play this course at a very high level. And though there'll be more names at the top of the leaderboard challenging that you wouldn't necessarily see, it doesn't mean that he's not also going to be one of them. So yeah, I think he has a great chance to win again and make it three straight.
Now, as you look at Gannon Burr, according to Edwin's stats, he's the second best player at this event, past yeah. performance wise, behind only Isaac Robinson. He's had an incredible start to the season. Like I said, all top 10 finishes except for, I believe it was 13th at Waco last weekend or 2 weekends ago, whenever that was. So an incredible start to the season, but only one win.
Yeah.
Which I know that's got to be itching at Gannon because he's in the conversation with AB week in and week out because of the start to his season. Mm-hmm. But the difference is now Calvin has more wins than him and AB has more wins than him. He only has one.
Yeah.
You got to think he's hungry coming into this week. What do you think? Is this Gannon Burr's course? Is this Gannon Burr's week? Or is it just going to be another top 10?
He's super due right now. Super due for another win. He's been in contention so much. He's done such a great job to get himself in the fight every single event. He just has to be a little more consistent. I know this itches at him. I remember talking to him the year he won USDGC. And before he won, I talked to him the week before USDGC. And I remember him just talking about how he felt like he had so many opportunities that season to win and he wasn't getting the win total he wanted. And that can be so frustrating in golf because there's only one winner. It's so hard. Well, unless it's Ledgestone that one year
yeah.
or Idlewild or whatever.
That was Ledgestone. 2020.
I think it was. There's only one winner. So it's very difficult to come out on top, and you can be playing such good golf and just be on the wrong end of one or two breaks that doesn't let you win. And I know right now he's probably got that feeling because he's been in contention. He's got these runner-ups, these third places. And it's another course that suits him really well. We kind of mentioned, but there's a lot of holes in this course where that are low ceiling. Whenever you are a flat player, a player who likes to throw the disc flat, it's easier to keep the disc low. He also likes to throw those overstable shots that flex out to the right and come back. There's a lot of holes where you're playing down those aisles of trees where that's the shot shape. It's get it out into the open and let it crash back. He'll be great at executing those, throws plenty far. Yeah, and what kind of baskets are we playing at? Latitude one, so you should be good to go.
Yeah, no, I like him. I like him out here. He's one of those players where like you got to assume he's going to be in contention. And Gannon is a proven winner time and time again.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly is holding him back from having more than one this year. Sometimes it's just been as simple as it was AB's weekend.
I think
sorry,
he needs
Gannon,
more hot rounds.
But,
you know?
Yeah, that is... I don't know. It's hard to put your finger exactly on like one specific thing. Cause like what's good about where Gannon's at, and this has even happened with AB some, is tournaments where it feels like something's not clicking, he's not quite on, he's still near the top 10 or in the top 10 yeah. all but once. Yeah. Like he is still right there. That's... So then it's just like one more thing has to click and he wins.
Yeah.
So is it this the weekend one more thing clicks? Could be. Is it not? I don't know. I like him at this course. I definitely like him here more than some of the other courses we'll get to later and later in the season. But Gannon's another player he could win anywhere. So a player who I think if they're going to capitalize and get a win, this is one of their best chances, is Aaron Gossage. Lost in a playoff last year, but has a great game for this course. Forehand, backhand, roller. He kind of has it all. Is the big question with him, there's a lot of construction noise, heads up. But big question with him is his putting too much for him to overcome to get a win?
Yeah.
Or too bad, I guess is how I should put it.
Yeah, I don't know. Aaron Gossage, I was very high on him going into the season. Hasn't been amazing so far. And therefore, I'm not willing to just... I thought he was going to be a guy I was going to like at a lot of events this year, and I'm still not saying he doesn't have a chance, but I don't think that the rest of his game is at a level that's going to overcome that putting. At the end of the day, FPO division, sometimes you can outthrow the field enough to make up for it. There's not as many. I mean, you have so many 95% and above putters from tournament to tournament, and that's just really hard to overcome. The only time you're going to overcome that is when there's adverse weather or if there's a ton of OB to where throwing is just going to matter that much more. And at a course like this, I don't see that being enough of a factor to take the putting out of the equation. At the end of the day, you're just not going to putt poorly, at least to his standards. He's not going to putt poorly and win an event.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think a course like this, everyone's going to have looks,
yeah,
right? It's going to come down a lot of time. Sometimes a course can be such a thrower's course that it turns back into a putting course. I think that's almost what this is. It's
just kind of turns into a C2 putter's course.
Yeah, so many guys, and I think that's where Ham is really excels, which is why I think he was able to win it last year. So many guys are going to put themselves in position where they can score. Mm-hmm. It comes back to who can convert on that. So it like flips it back to a approach and putting game. Because like the drive matters, but everyone's going to be able to put themselves a lot of times in a good spot to attack. And sometimes when Aaron Gossage putt struggles, he's got to be within 15 feet to make it.
Yeah.
And when you're going up against, if Isaac Robinson gets hot and that guy could throw it to within 65 feet and make it, and you have to put it within 15, you're playing a whole different game.
Yeah.
And that's just like whoever gets hot, if they're making their putts from 60, I think his putt is just too much for him to overcome right now. Because the real problem is, it's mental. When his putt is on, you see it. But where you see it collapse is when he gets in pressure situations. And if you're going to win a Pro Tour event, you're going to be in pressure situations.
Yeah.
And so until he gets that fixed, I don't see him winning one. Although I do think this is probably one of his best chances this year is this event. Now, after his incredibly hot start, AB, we talked about this a little bit, has went 10th, 14th, 18th in his last three. Does that slip downward trend continue, or is he back in contention this week?
I don't think it continues. I think this course is very well suited for him. His distance is going to be a big advantage out here. So I think that is probably going to come to a screeching halt. I would expect a top five easily here. I just don't see, as long as he's not playing awful, I don't see him having a tough time on this track. And I think so lately the trend has been one not so great start to a round one, literally, and then kind of finishing the round one okay, and then a good round two and three. We have four rounds now. I think that means if he does have kind of a shaky start, he's going to have more time to get himself back in the mix, because he's been charging in those other events to get back into contention, or back into the top 20. So I think with the four rounds and at this course, I really like him here.
Yeah, I don't think the slip continues, as in I don't think he finishes worse than 18th. I don't quite know if he's going to be in contention. The thing that's holding me up is the past player performance. He's played this event three times before. And his top finish ever out here is 11th. Obviously, we're dealing with a different Anthony Barella this year.
You keep bringing up the past AB.
And I was right last time.
No, that's not true. You said he was going to play awful at Champions Cup.
I said he wasn't going to win Champions Cup.
That we can roll back the clips.
He's going to play awful.
I think where you said he was going to finish outside of, he ended up finishing inside of.
We had a look. I think I probably said top 15 or top 20. I think he came in 14th. I think that was that event. So yeah,
I don't remember, but I'm just saying, like, the past AB stats are meaningless. They are absolutely meaningless.
To me, I think he's able to get top 10 here. I don't really see him in the top five here.
That's crazy.
So I don't think the slip continues.
Thrower's course. He's got three wins on the season, and you don't think top five.
I think it's possible. Yeah, absolutely, it's possible. Yeah.
My
prediction is I don't think he's going to be inside top five.
I mean, we're throwing darts, so
yeah, that's my prediction. It's just I don't think he's going to be in the top five here. I think he very easily could. It's just the stats. I'm just looking at stats. And historically, he hasn't. He's never done it. So I think a top five is possible. Absolutely, it's Anthony Barella. But he's went 10th, 14th, 18th in his last three. And historically, he has not ever finished in the top 10 out here. So I think he can come top 10. I don't think he comes top five. That's my prediction.
Fair enough.
Now, also according to Edwin's stats, we're rocking with Isaac Robinson. Best player historically at this event. Although he hasn't won it yet, his top finish ever is third. Is this his year?
I think he's a weird anomaly on this one. I mean, like I said, I think he's a good angle control player. He's accurate. You know, he'll keep the disc in play. I don't know. I this must just be an event where his putting is heated up a bit, because I think that that's such a huge part of his game, to be you're knocking down long putts. I actually do think, now that I think back to last year, I think this was an event where he was making a lot of circle two putts. I'm starting to remember like a potentially a highlight reel from him making circle two putts. So I think that has a lot to do with it. So I think if his putter comes alive, you know, he's going to be dangerous every event. He's started to kind of throw himself into the mix at some events. He's just not quite into that upper threshold. And I think that's what's missing. Is I don't think I've ever seen him win an event. Well, when he was winning at WR, that course suited his game just really well, and he was just point and shooting. But any other course that I've seen him play really well at, I've never seen that happen without him accompanied by a highlight reel of him just draining putts from everywhere. So, and I think that's a tough place to be as a player. But whenever you do lack some of the distance and you do lack the sidearm, you've got to fill in gaps somewhere. Like if you're going to be a winner.
He posted a video. He's working on his sidearm.
Don't like the way it looks.
It didn't look good.
It came out good. Yeah. I mean, who cares? Not everybody has a pretty sidearm, but it didn't look great. But it did come out smooth. You have to have a certain amount of tools. You know, a lot of guys on tour right now that are winning have the throwing distance and the throwing accuracy. That's kind of the combo that's winning a lot of tournaments. Some of these guys, they don't have that distance tool. Well, if you don't have that one, I think you have to have the putting tool. Like that has to be the other one you have. And so it's going to have to all come together for him at an event to actually pull off the win, because there's going to be so many guys that are out driving him. And so I think it could happen, but it's going to have to be something that really pops off for him. And I know, you know, a lot of his wins, I remember at Idlewild that first year, he really came alive. He kind of said he didn't really suspect anything, and then all of a sudden the putt started going in. So I don't think this is gonna be something you can really predict. You can kind of just try and time it up right, but when his putter gets hot, it'll get hot, and that's gonna be what he needs. I'm not ready to say that. It's just like, I'm not ready to put a prediction down and say Isaac is going to play super well.
I like Isaac here. I think he has been slowly heating up as the years come on. I don't see him ending this year without a win, just because the two majors last year, and like he was in contention so much, but I thought he would have already had one by now with the season he was coming into. I think that statistically, obviously, this course he's good at, and I think as he plays more courses that suit him well, he will get more in contention and he will perform better and better. So is this his year? You know, I picked him in my top three. I think I like him out here, but it does all come down to the putting. Luckily, putting is all mental, and I do think if you're feeling good and you have good history, that helps a lot. So maybe it's even just playing on the latitude baskets.
The thing about
it could just be like, oh, I love this basket. I love this course. Maybe the basket just looks bigger with the way the trees are. I don't know.
Nice.
The shadows could be different out there or something. Isaac Robinson's just draining them. But I like him out here. The tough part is just there's so many players that have the advantage throwing over him, that he's going to be running into walls of Calvin, of Gannon.
Well, that's,
he's going to bring in the Ezra Aderholds of the world. Corey Ellis is apparently sneaky good at this course. Drew Gibson's won out here before. Eagle McMahon's back. Like, there's so many players that get brought into the conversation. It's like, can he rise above it? Yes. Will he? We'll see.
That's the thing about the average. When you talk about the average score, Isaac Robinson's a consistent player at the right course. Like, he is going to be consistent. So yes, he's first in average score, but the reason that isn't translating the win is because yes, that means in the two events he's played there, he's played well over four rounds, or if it was four both times, I'm not sure, but he's played consistently well. But at the end of the day, like you mentioned, is there's going to be players like, it's like when Calvin had last season and he's top three all the time. It's one thing to be consistently good, but you've got to be perfect for a tournament to win these.
Well, the crazy thing about his average score is 28 under. 30 under was the winning score last year.
That's average score for the tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm saying like both times he's played, he's averaged between those two events 28 under.
Yeah.
The last year winning score was 30 under.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He's consistently good, but you have to go out for a weekend and be awesome. Like, you can't just be a solid player and get a win. You can have an awesome average finishing place. And all, I mean, look at Gannon, his average finishing place right now rocks. It's so good. It looks like, if you just said Gannon over 10, 11, however many events, his average finish place is
like five.
I think it's
something.
Like four or five. You'd probably think he has more than one win. That just doesn't cut it on the tour. Like, you have to go out for a tournament and play your best golf and be an awesome player to get it done. And so, like, that's where Isaac's running into trouble. You know, just the being a good player isn't enough. You have to be a good player and you have to play awesome for a weekend.
Yeah, that's where we're at with how deep the Pro Tour is you got to be a good or great player and it has to be your weekend.
Yeah.
It's not just one or the other anymore.
Yeah, it's not.
Now, the final player to talk about here is Eagle McMahon. Mm-hmm. He won this event back in 2021.
Yeah.
He's back from his injury. Rough start at Champions Cup. Looked a lot better at OTB Open.
Yeah.
Now this event, obviously this course suits him well. What are your expectations on Eagle now?
I really had kind of accelerated his timeline in my mind. I think, was he top 15 last week?
I think he came 13th. Yeah.
Yeah, he was solid last week, but still kind of slow, still kind of figuring things out. So I'm going to pump the brakes on Eagle. I'm going to say that he does improve a little bit, maybe slightly. Like I could see a top 10 here, but maybe just he takes another 13th or 12th. But I'm not ready to say that his trajectory is as fast as I thought it was going to be, where he was going to move up a lot last week and then be right in the mix going into Portland. You know, not going to shock me, but I would say I'd be a little more surprised now after I've seen a few weeks and been able to digest it if Eagle was just pushing the pace at this tournament. I don't think we're going to see an Eagle that comes out first round, throws in something that's hot or close to hot, and it's like, okay, Eagle is running the sprint with everybody else. I think it could be another one where he strings together four solid rounds, gets himself a nice finish, but isn't quite as fast into this process as I thought. And, you know, we actually talked about it to Simon when we saw him at Maple Hill, and he said that he's been able to kind of figure out his bag somewhat, but because of his injury and how long it's taken him to recover, that process has been frustrating for him. And so I think that you can kind of see that in his play right now. It's just not quite perfect.
I think the most frustrating part is he was just, first he learned to bag left-handed, then he started throwing right-handed, but he was throwing at elevation.
Yeah.
And then he went to sea level more or less, or a lot lower at Champions Cup. Mm-hmm. And like, you didn't see a disc fly there all week.
No.
And so OTB, I think, was finally, he's able to like get it. The good thing is OTB, he had a week off last week. Where he was for that week off, I don't know. If he was like stayed on the West Coast, he didn't go back home, I think that's important. If he stayed where he had a week to play and just keep learning those discs, keep getting comfortable, I think this could be a really good weekend for him. I think top 10, it feels good. Top 10 feels right, but it's Eagle McMahon. If his putter gets hot and he's throwing the disc well, like he is still one of, if not the top arm talents in the world. And yeah. So if he gets hot, of course he could win.
Yeah.
Is this the weekend he does it? Who knows? We will find out. Any other players you want to mention to look out for before we head into FPO?
Yeah, I've got a big one, and it's Ezra Aderholt.
Yeah, he was on my list.
Yeah, he is knocking on the door right now. He plays well at this course. It suits his game. I think he is going to be extremely, extremely dangerous. And then one I'll mention that isn't in attendance is Simon Lazat, because I think this would have been
a good one for
a
him.
Very big event for him. But yeah, there's a lot of guys to pick from. Ezra Aderholt for me is going to be very dangerous.
Yeah, Ezra was on my list. I also think this is an important event for Ricky, because the more the season goes on, and he's having a fine season.
Yeah.
But I think that like he's not getting thrown in the conversation with the Calvins, with the Gannons, with the ABs, because he doesn't have that win.
Yeah, it's a who is Ricky Wysocki? Is he just another one of the solid pros to pick a win, or is he a dominant guy that's going to get multiple wins in a season?
Yeah,
maybe win a major. Finally, like that's what this season is right now, is like, who is he in this modern era of disc golf? So far, you know, he's been able to hold his own against these new young guns. But this season, it's like, yeah, when is he going to get that first win so he can really start to build on his resume and continue the dominance we've seen out of Ricky Wysocki?
Well, because he's facing a similar identity crisis that we saw Paul go through, which just not at the same level, where when you hear Ricky Wysocki, if you're a player or a fan that's been in the game as long as us, you can't shake the dominance from that name. So when he has a season like this, where we're sitting in almost June, this event's going to go into June, when we're sitting at the start of June and he doesn't have a win,
we're halfway through the season.
It doesn't matter what his finishes are. That feels like a flop.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. He's not finished only top five, but it wouldn't matter, because with the brand that has been built, that's the standard. And this is an identity year. Like, Paul has been able to rebrand somewhat. I think it still hurts that his brand was built on dominance, but now you understand, like, Paul's a top 20 guy. When he gets in contention, it's electric. That's just kind of where Paul is right now. Could he get back to that dominance? Sure. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. Ricky is at this decision point, right? Of like, one road is he wins here, wins in a few weeks, and boom, now we're talking Calvin, Ricky, AB, Gannon. The other road is he continues just finishing solid, and we're talking about him every week, but it's just is this Ricky's week?
Yeah,
maybe not. Okay, now like it changes the narrative, and I think this is the start of an important stretch for Ricky from now through the European Open. I think like Ricky needs a win in this middle of the season stretch. Obviously he could get two or three down the stretch coming home and he ends the season and we're talking about player of the year. But I think most likely the route that things are going to go is, I think if Ricky wants to be in contention for the best player in the world, it's important for him to get a win within the next month, month and a half. And it's really important for him this season to win a major, because this is year 7. Since his major. I think this...
Seriously.
You know, if we start getting close to a decade without a major from Rick, which we are, we're closer to a decade than we're not, that's kind of crazy to me. So I think this is an important weekend for Ricky. I think a win here could really start putting him back on the radar, put him back with the guys that I think he sees himself with.
What's crazy,
it's just fan perception's not there.
He's what, 30, 31?
I think he's 31.
So like the last time that dude won a major, he was 24. Younger than me. Like... he was a very much a young talent the last time he won a major, and he has gone a lot of years without one. That's crazy. That's a crazy thing.
Well, the crazy thing too is, I think it was 2017 Worlds, right? And he was, it almost felt like that was the Ricky era, right? Yeah. Because you had the Paul era, 2012 to 2015. 2016, Paul and Ricky are dueling. Ricky wins Worlds. Ricky wins Worlds again in 2017. It felt like the start of the changing of guards almost. Mm-hmm. Like it felt like, oh, Ricky's pulling ahead.
Does he only have those two though?
He might have another major, but that 2017 Worlds is like the last one, and he's a two-time world champ. But since then, Paul has rattled off, I believe, what, 2018 USDGC. I think he might have won a European Open. He won two more world titles or one more world title. One more.
He won 20.
Two more. He won 2019 and 2020.
Two. Yeah.
So because he's a 6-time world champ. So Paul since then has like come back and he has won more majors in that stretch. That's than true. Like Ricky's winless there. That just is not, if you would have told us in 2017, hey, over the next 7 years, Paul's going to win more majors than Ricky, it didn't feel like that because the momentum had shifted so much. Yet here we are.
Yeah.
And it's not even close.
Well, I'd say I would have been like, okay, but if you would have said, yeah, and Ricky's going to have zero, I would have been like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just bizarre.
Here we are. So I think this is a very important season for Ricky. On the Pro Tour win-wise, yes. On the major win-wise, definitely. Yeah. Because this isn't even it's not even like, oh, making a storyline. It just is a storyline now. Mm-hmm. Like Ricky just isn't winning majors.
Yeah.
Crazy. Now on FPO, we're still missing the European players, so it yet again is kind of anyone's game. I think this was originally where Kristen was going to come back, but she had that rib injury. Yeah. We're not going to see her for a while. Ella Hansen, however, is coming off of her first win and going into a course that should suit her game. Could this be the start of a hot streak for her?
Totally. Yeah, I think this is a huge opportunity. Got the win at OTB. Now in her home state, I believe she's from Oregon originally, in her home state here, she's got... two events at courses that'll play just fine for her game. And I think she has a great chance to grab another win in these next couple weeks and really solidify an awesome season that's already awesome just by getting her first win and be a threat in this weakened field at the moment. So, yeah, I'd expect that she has a lot of confidence right now.
Yeah, no, and she should. I think this course really suits her game well, and I think that, again, a win does one of two things to players. We talked about this with AB. When AB got that first win, it unlocked him, and he turned into this dominant force.
Yeah.
That could happen to Ella Hansen, right? She's always had potential. She's always been that player that we're, like, shocked at how subpar she's performing to her capabilities. OTB Open, she finally gets that win.
Yeah.
That is either going to...
passion too.
That's either going to add pressure... and she might crumble under it, or it's going to be freeing and be like, everything I've worked for already paid off. I can just play disc golf now.
Yeah.
There is no storyline. I just won. No one can say anything. And that can lead to a chain of events and a chain of wins. And I like her out here. I really think that this course could suit her game well. Now that she has that win off her back, I really think that she could win out here. Another player that, you know, always is in the same breath as her, it feels like, is Holland Handley. She did not perform very well out here last year. I think she shot one over, and I believe Kristen won at close to 20 under, maybe over 20 under.
25.
So she was 26 strokes off of Kristen Tatar last year. Not at all where I would expect. Is this a situation where Holland Handley's just a different player this year? That's a fluke? Or is there something with her game in this course?
I think it's just an anomaly, honestly, because I don't think it has anything really to do with, I think she was still a good player last year, obviously, pretty similar player, maybe a little better this year, but this course makes perfect sense for her game. She has a great arm. Yeah, I think that was a really weird tournament. That's what I'm going to just label that one, because if I think about it too much, it might break my brain.
Yeah, no, I would agree. This course should suit her game. The only thing I could think of is she can spray the disc sometimes, so maybe it's just an OB problem where, like, on her approach shot, she's leaving him in the
probably
hazard
was
of OB.
A difference maker.
Or maybe it's the putt went away. I don't know. But I think she should be in contention out here. Everything about it says she should. The last two players we're going to talk about, obviously, is the obvious favorites, Owen Scoggins, Missy Gannon. Of those two, which do you like more?
Probably Owen, because I feel like both of them are not great on super long courses, but I feel like Owen, for whatever reason, probably because she's a good putter from distance, is usually the one who performs better in those situations, because I don't like either of them as much as I normally would at a long course, but I like Owen more, and I think it's because 40 to 60 feet, she's still dangerous to where she's not able to get into C1 regulation. She can't reach. She can still make up for that with her putt.
Yeah, no, I agree. I like Owen more. She finished better out here last year is one of the big reasons. But I think when I think through it, she has a solid backhand, but she obviously relies heavily on that forehand. And I think that forehand, she knows her cap. She knows her game and she sticks to it. And I think an FPO on a course like this, a lot of players can get baited into going for stuff they probably shouldn't. Owen doesn't seem to be that player. She seems to know her game plan, stick to it, make putts when she needs to make putts, and you know what she's going to get out of her. Missy, I think, with her backhand, can sometimes get baited into stuff that she shouldn't be going for, and that can lead to trouble. Because is she capable of some of the shots she's attempting? Yes, but with how much OB and hazard and stuff there is near these greens, how much rollaway potential and stuff there is, I think that I like Owen's angle control more than Missy's, because Owen is doing a lot more chop over forehand flex shots into greens, whereas Missy's doing a lot more flip up shots. And I think there's just more unpredictability if the flip up, as a player who that is my preferred shot, unpredictability sometimes into greens if you're trying to flip up stuff, especially if the wind picks up or anything like that. So I'm going to lean towards Owen, but wouldn't surprise me if both of them were in contention. So let's get into the predictions. Point standings right now, I'm at 44, Trevor's at 58. We actually tied overall points wise at OTB. I think so. Yeah. I got two from one from MPO, one from FPO, and Trevor got two for the dark horse. Almost got 10 if Gavin Rathbun would have done it for you, but he didn't.
I got one from FPO too.
Then you beat me by one.
No, see, I had Ella.
Then you gained one on me.
Yeah.
I wrote it down as you told me, so I just said it wrong. You gained one on me then.
Sweet.
MPO, I'll read my top three. I'll go from third to first. I put Ezra Aderholt in my top three because I really like him out here. Could he win? Yeah. So I want him in my top three just because I want the chance at points there. Yeah. Calvin Heimberg is the guy I have to have in my top three. I put him second because I'm putting all my chips in. I'm going Isaac Robinson. I'm knocking AB and Gannon outside my top three. I'm not putting Ricky in my top three.
Ambitious.
Isaac Robinson.
It's very ambitious.
Give it to me.
Well,
please.
Similar look.
You got to make up points somehow.
Yeah, very similar look because I also had Ezra in third.
Okay.
I thought about just taking him to win, but I was like, you know what? I don't think it's quite time. So I took him in third. I did go Calvin in second as well, but I did take AB to win.
Okay. So really, it's just AB or Isaac Robinson.
Yeah, I flip-flop on Gannon a lot. I think like there's probably a great chance he'll finish top three again. We'll both lose points on that, but I wanted to take a stab at Ezra Aderholt. I just think that I think there's a really good chance he gets in that top three and has a chance to win this event.
Yeah,
I'm not ready. I'm not sold on Isaac yet.
Something of this event does like it almost feels Waco-esque, where like it feels like anyone could win.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Four rounds, man. It's a lot of disc golf.
I will say four rounds definitely does favor the Gannon, Calvin, AB, even Ricky. Like, it does favor them.
Certainly,
but Ezra's been having himself a good season, and I like him at this course. So, FPO-wise, my top three, I went pretty chalk here. I went Owen Scoggins to win, Ella Hansen to come in second, and Missy Gannon to come in third. I couldn't get Holland Hanley's last year performance out of my mind. I just couldn't quite do it.
I'm doing it.
All right.
I'm doing it in an extreme fashion because I took Holland Hanley to win.
All right.
I took Owen in second and then Ella Hansen in third.
All right, so you're putting Missy.
Yeah.
There you have it. And my dark horse pick, I went with last year's champion, Adam Jaimes. I don't think he puts enough together to win, but if he does, I want the 10 points.
I've got Gavin Babcock. He's kind of getting sneaky on the radar. I believe he's got three straight top 10s. I think he's got a 10th and 8th and then a 5th that was at Las Vegas in a very stacked field. So he's been really, really good his last 3 weeks, and his game has been getting better. And at this course, where there's a large margin for error off the tee, I think Gavin Babcock could be really, really good here.
That's a great one. So there you have it. Be sure to tune in all weekend long. Again, it's an Elite Plus event, so it's going to start on Thursday. You'll have 4 days of golf ahead of you. And then on Monday, you can tune in to Grip Lock and hear us recap it all. We'll see you then.